Welcome back to the podcast. Today, Germany backtracks on pollution goals. VW struggles with job cuts and the Ford Ranger is upgraded. Plus, stay tuned. Later in the show, I'll tell you why people in Australia are bidding on Rivians they can't even drive. And on EV News China, our Chinese spin-off show, today we're talking about China EVs joining the global top 10, Leap Motors Laffer 5, and Tesla denying a China breakup. Let's get into it. Germany's Chancellor will write to the European Union and oppose the ban on sales of new combustion cars from 2035, setting up a high-level clash at the heart of Europe. Europe's clean air goals, reduction in pollution, cleaning up the air that we breathe is crucial for this and all future generations. And now, Germany breaking from those promises, it seems. Friedrich Merz, the Chancellor, said in Berlin earlier today that he will send a formal letter to the European Commission urging it to keep technological options open for the auto industry. And from 2035, he wants plug-in hybrids, combustion engine range extenders, and more efficient conventional engines. This, of course, would be a disaster for air pollution across the bloc, and there's going to be many countries that push back on that within the European Union. And of course, it just doesn't seem the right thing to do, what with wanting to clean up the air for future generations, you know, that we pass on. But still, Germany and its auto industry in a perilous position right now. The timing is deliberate because on December 10th, the Commission will unveil a support package for Europe's struggling car industry, which is wrestling with patchy battery EV demand in some places, American tariffs and competition from China. The package will revisit the EU's 2035 emissions roadmap. Earlier this year, car makers won relief on CO2 rules. Emissions will now be averaged across the 2025 to 2027 period rather than over this single year. Merz's stance largely matches the preference of the German automakers, of course, who want more flexibility to carry on selling combustion engines and highly polluting vehicles because it makes them money. Campaigners say Berlin is turning its back on cleaning up the air. Sebastian Bock of Transport and Environment Germany warning that anyone who thinks Germany will be able to secure jobs and value creation in the future with combustion, which is already outdated even today, is closing their eyes to reality. Okay, let's move on. Volkswagen is one of those struggling companies. Their main car brand is falling behind its own overhaul itself. Volkswagen pledged deep job cuts in Germany to fund the shift to EV, yet the pace of departures is slowing as thin EV margins and high US tariffs squeeze them. In December, the company set a goal of cutting 35,000 jobs in Germany by 2030. That's about a quarter of the brand's German workforce. An internal memo seen by the Financial Times today says 25,000 staff have accepted exit deals since early in 2024. But momentum has now faded. Only about 1,000 people signed up to leave in the third quarter of this year, compared to an average of 4,000 every 3 months over the previous year and a half. Volkswagen still needs 10,000 more Germans to agree to go. The timing is awkward. The company's traditional cost base is colliding with the much slimmer margins on the electric cars they make. And on top of that, it faces 5 billion euros of extra costs from high US tariffs and mounting losses at Porsche are eroding the funds for new models and battery investment. Let's talk Ford. They're doing more than refreshing the Ranger's plug-in hybrid in Europe. It's turning the region's best-selling pickup into a bit of a tech demo. New trims, big screens, and a segment-first hands-free highway system. Blue Cruise is coming to the Ranger plug-in hybrid. On top of the existing XLT, Wildtrak, and MSRT versions, Ford Pro is adding platinum and limited trims to the plug-in hybrid Ranger. The idea is to widen access while keeping the truck's core strengths. Towing, off-roadability, payload, vehicle to load, all Ranger models now come with a 12.4-inch configurable digital instrument cluster and a 12-inch central touchscreen. Let's go to France. They're keeping their electric vehicle purchase subsidy, the so-called bonus écologique, in place until the end of next year. The move preserves the legal framework that was due to run until the end of this year and offers rare policy stability for Europe's second largest EV market at a delicate moment. The current bonus depends on both household income and the carbon footprint of making the vehicle and the battery. Since the middle of this year, France has dropped fixed grant amounts, supporting instead levels move with the prices in the market for energy saving certificates, or the CEE. And funding now comes from this CEE system rather than the state budget itself. At today's prices, low-income households can receive up to €5,700, middle-income buyers get €4,700, and higher-income buyers still get €3,500 off a new vehicle. This framework is now locked in until the end of 2026, designed to taper support over time. Even so, subsidy levels were raised in July of this year after sitting between £2,000 and £4,000 since the beginning of 2024. Tying the bonus to the CEE prices looks like a response to softening demand after a small drop in EV registrations in the first half of 2025. Let's talk Hyundai. They're expanding their vehicle-to-grid and vehicle-to-home services in Korea, Europe, and the United States, so their EVs will be part of the national energy systems. The latest phase adds V2G in Korea and Europe, plus vehicle-to-home in the US. In Korea, Hyundai plans the country's first vehicle-to-grid customer pilot on Jeju Island by the end of this year, using the Kia EV9 and Hyundai IONIQ 9. In Europe, a commercial V2G service will start in the Netherlands, with customer onboarding expected by the end of this year. And talking about supporting the grid, from 2026, Renault and WeDrive Solar will offer the Netherlands' first vehicle-to-grid AC service for private EV owners. Instead of just drawing power, Renault's will work as mobile batteries that support the grid. Owners will charge when wind and solar output is high and electricity is cheaper at those times, then sell it back to the grid when demand and prices are higher. A small group of early users in the Netherlands will start onboarding in the coming weeks, ahead of a full public launch in the first half of 2026. The Dutch rollout follows Renault Group's earlier launch of AC vehicle-to-grid in France. To begin with, the service will be limited to Renault Group models fitted with V2G-ready onboard chargers, and more vehicles due to be added next year. It builds on WeDrive's 10 years of work on bidirectional charging and its national network of AC V2G charge points and their role in projects such as the Utrecht Energized scheme. Now, Tesla is stepping up European production as demand for the Model Y from Berlin is redrawing their delivery routes. Gigafactory Berlin has moved to two full shifts, while in Norway, Tesla is setting new annual sales records, beating Volkswagen's long-standing benchmark from 2016. Berlin plant manager André Thierig telling German news agency DPA that the factory has been running two shifts since September to keep up with demand. The site now ships cars to over 30 markets. Because of the tariff spat between the US and Europe, Model Ys built in Germany now go to Canada. Even with the second shift, Berlin still has plenty of room to grow. The plant builds several versions of the Model Y, performance and standard among them, but it remains focused on that single model. Tesla's factories elsewhere, in Texas, Fremont, and Shanghai, each assemble more than one vehicle line, which suggests Berlin has scope either to add new models or to lift Model Y volumes. One of the questions being asked today in an analysis piece by Reuters, which I thought was interesting, was about where Tesla goes as a car company. Their decade-long growth story as an automaker has stalled in 2025 as they very publicly pivot to AI and robotics. New figures show sharp sales declines in Europe are now going to be locked in for 2025. Growing pressure from China and a fading lift from the American tax break since the end of the tax credit. In Europe, Tesla's sales are down 49% from a year ago, according to the European Carmakers Association. In 2025, sales in the region are down as the overall EV market is up 26%. The analyst platform, Visible Alpha, expects Tesla's global deliveries to be down 7% this year. It contrasts with Tesla's record third quarter deliveries because of American buyers racing to claim their tax credit. The numbers suggest deeper problems, though. In Europe, Tesla depends on just the 3 and the Y. Analysts see market saturation and fierce price competition below $30,000, where more than a dozen electric cars now vie for buyers. Electrifying.com counts at least 50 new electric models due in the UK next year. Its boss, Ginny Buckley, says out of those 50, none of them will be a Tesla. Rivals are seizing the opening as well. BYD sold 17,500 cars in Europe in October, more than twice Tesla's tally. Volkswagen's global EV sales through September are up as well, roughly three times Tesla's. The problem for Elon Musk is also that Europeans have caught up, says Ferdinand Dudenhofer of the car think tank. In China, Tesla's deliveries are down 36% in October and 8.4% the year so far. Squeezed by heavy discounting from the likes of Xiaomi, Chery, BYD and others, and in the United States, where the end of the tax credit brought forward sales, the 18% sales jump in September turned into a 24% drop in October. So Reuters asking today in their analysis piece, if you're an investor, you face a hard question. Do the cars that they make matter as much anymore when the future is robots and lines of code? Can cheaper versions of the Model 3 and the Y, retreating electric plans at some legacy car makers and indeed the CEO's bet on self-driving, steady demand? Well, whilst ambitious, Tesla's chief executive's new pay package requires an ever smaller amount of actual cars to be sold. Only 1.2 million vehicles to hit his trillion-dollar payday. Selling that many per year is well below even the 2024 volumes. So maybe we'll be talking a little less about them here. Maybe a little bit more if we ever launch Robotics News Daily. That might not be happening. We'll take a break. And when we come back, we'll talk batteries and Fiat and KGM and Russia. Stick around, back in a mo. All right, welcome back to the podcast. A huge new battery plant is rising next to Nissan's Sunderland factory. Sunderland, a city in the northeast of this country, where Nissan's made one of three locations that have made the Leaf traditionally around the world. Global cell maker AESC is preparing to switch on a 15.8 gigawatt hour factory that will feed directly into Nissan's next generation Leaf and the UK's wider EV plans. Fresh job listings show the project is moving into its launch phase. This will be AESC's second battery plant in Sunderland, taking its total annual capacity in the city to 15.8 gigawatts, enough cells for about 100,000 electric cars a year. Built on land previously owned by Nissan and sitting directly beside the car plants, you can go from one place to the other with an overpass over one of the main roads. The new facility will supply batteries for the third generation Leaf. That should be with customers soon. Fiat has slashed the starting price of the Panda in the United Kingdom. Brits will now pay £21,000 to get into that, thanks to a new base trim. Official range, around 200 miles. The new Pop grade, previously limited to the Grand Panda Hybrid, replaces red as the entry specification. Standard kit, 16-inch steelies, LED headlights, two-tone black and blue cloth upholstery. Red-painted cars at any trim now wear red badging in support of the AIDS-fighting charity. At £21,000, the Panda Electric undercuts rivals, but not those like the Leap Motor T03, that's still cheaper, as well as the Dacia Spring, BYD Dolphin Surf, and Citroën EC3 coming in lower, but it is very competitive pricing. Fiat is pitching the car as a straightforward city and suburban runabout. Power from the front-mounted 111-horsepower motor, 44-kilowatt-hour pack, good for 200 miles of range, DC rapid at 100 kilowatts, and an integrated AC charging cable. If you haven't seen the pictures, many people over the years have said, why don't the cars just have some sort of flap you can open and it comes out? Well, it does, from the front, on a stretchy cable. So you haven't got to carry an AC lead around in your boot, as us Europeans are used to doing. Now, let's talk about the South Korean company, formerly SsangYong, now KGM, widening their EV footprint in Australia with a mid-size SUV called the Torres EVX. The brand's first all-electric model in the class. It's $58,000 drive away, pitched squarely at mainstream contenders like the BYD C-Lion 7 and the Kia EV5. It's their second EV announcement in quick succession, following confirmation of the Musso EV. That's a ute, by the way, and underlines the rapid shift to going EV. Power comes from a single front-mounted electric motor, 152 kilowatts, 81 kilowatt-hour LFP pack on the WLTP cycle, good for 462 kilometres of range. 10 to 80 in 37 minutes. It's a bit of a slouch when it comes to charging. Have you ever been kept awake at night wondering what Vladimir Putin thinks of EVs? No, neither have I. But I'll tell you anyway. Chinese electric cars are now crowding Russia's roads, even as direct imports from China have fallen sharply. The mismatch between what Russians are driving and what China is shipping points to a quiet change in how Beijing's car makers serve Russia. In an interview with television on Thursday yesterday, Vladimir Putin lavished praise on Chinese makers. And I quote, "The Chinese make electric cars better and cheaper than Europeans. The European automotive industry is in tatters overall," he said. Putin says Russia is striving for maximum localization, including production of component parts of cars for its own market. That push is reshaping which firms rely on exports and which are preparing to build on the ground. Li Auto, Voya and Zeekr are important shippers of finished vehicles to Russia. Li Auto, known as Lixiang in China, plans to open its first Russian showroom within weeks. Its October deliveries in Russia, just under 1,500 vehicles, hint at the early spread of higher-end Chinese EVs. Now, what does the Essex town of Basildon have in common with Ho Chi Minh City? Well, both sets of residents probably share the same frustrations. For instance, Ho Chi Minh City commuters have to navigate millions of scooters zipping between street food carts, whilst Basildon residents have to stay sharp in the town centre multi-storey for discarded Asda trolleys. But now, both places can say that they are electrifying their bus networks. Basildon, located just outside London and built as a post-war overspill town, has opened Essex's first fully electric bus depot after a £30.6 million upgrade by First Bus. The site now has a regional testbed. The site is now a regional testbed in Britain's wider shift to zero-emission public transport. The Cherry Down Way depot has been retrofitted with high-capacity chargers to support 55 battery electric buses that charge overnight. The development with Essex County Council makes Basildon the first town in the county with a fully electrified bus facility. Meanwhile, in Ho Chi Minh City, they plan to convert 19 bus stations and depots into all-electric vehicle charging hubs, adding both bus chargers and battery swap cabinets for electric motorbikes. The move is the city's most tangible step so far to electrifying their public network. Under the proposal, the Public Transportation Management Centre will manage the sites and work with private money to build and run the facilities. Operating rights at all 19 locations will be auctioned off, and leasing the space will bring in about 22 billion dong. That's about $834,000 equivalent. And finally, what's worse than buying something like a used Fisker, made by the now defunct EV maker, with the possibility that one day you'll just wake up and the thing won't work and there's very difficult ways to fix it? Well, try not actually being able to drive the car that you just bought. A batch of Rivian R1Ts brought to Western Australia for mining have ended up in the auction lane. The vehicles are imported for a startup called Mevco and their planned mining fleet. It was a venture that has since collapsed, unfortunately. Well, the sale of the vehicles from the collapsed mining company throws up an awkward question about left-hand drive vehicles and stranded cars in Australia. Grays Auctions has confirmed that it will sell all the R1Ts that Mevco had bought for their mining operations, with multiple examples being spotted in the company's Perth yard as they are prepared for cataloguing. All are left-hand drive and were shipped in specifically for Australian mining work that that never happened. Across most of Australia, left-hand drive vehicles can't be registered for normal road use until they're more than 30 years old. And for anyone hoping to buy one of the Rivians and drive it home, that's a bit of a roadblock. Western Australia actually softens the picture, but only slightly. WA allows left-hand drive vehicles to be registered after 15 years of personal use, but there are exemptions for rare models, but the Rivian R1T is a mass-produced US pickup. It's not really going to qualify as a rarity. Several trucks appear to be wearing mining spec hardware in the pictures, including Kevlar and steel underbody protection. Custom tool drawers have been installed in the gear tunnel. They look actually really cool. And bull bars on the front. Clear signs they were built for harsh, remote work sites and not the suburban school run. Without right-hand drive conversion, which would technically be possible, there is no obvious route for anyone who buys these to even register one for public roads. In the short term, that confines them to mainly off-road recreation, maybe private industrial sites or future conversion projects from specialist workshops willing to take on the engineering work required. And that's your podcast for today. Thanks to our premium partners, National Car Charging on the US mainland and Aloha Charge in Hawaii and Octopus Electroverse. Global public charging made simple with one app and one map and a new name to add next week, which I'm really excited about. Have a good and see you tomorrow. And remember, there's no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.